This is Chapel for April 27, 1987-88. The speaker is Dr. Richard Hester, Professor of Pastoral Care. His message is entitled Southeastern Storm Narrative.
As we gather together to worship, let us lift up to our God those among us who need our prayers. Many of you have heard that Chris and Dale Shields' son, it's Chris's son, Mitch Jameson, was in a motorcycle accident. He is in very serious condition in Charlotte Memorial Hospital. Chris is with him. She doesn't get to see him but just a few minutes each day. But she and Dale and their extended family need our prayers desperately. Beverly Johnson is at home with her sister in South Raleigh. I talked to Beverly last night. She had not had a very good day. She had had some seizures again, and she was concerned about that. But she's glad to be out of the hospital and looking forward to graduation. And we also need to lift up Ron Gallion and Bob Hall, who have both had back surgery recently and are at home recuperating. Lift them up in your prayers, in your worship, and let us worship together. Lord God, we offer to you our tears and our songs. Tears for those who are hurting, sick, and frightened. Chris and Dale and their son Mitch, Beverly, Ron, Bob, and the others of us who are hurting silently. And songs of celebration for those who are graduating and those experiencing other special events in their lives and in the lives of those they love. Songs of hope, determination, commitment, and wonder. Give to us a vision as we worship. Help us to put into perspective the recent events of our lives and be steadfast to our callings. Help us to dream dreams again, dreams of peace and unity and hope. Speak to us through this your servant and carry us to a higher plane that we may leave here inspired and in touch with you, our God. Amen.
On the morning of May 7, 1988, people awakened between 6 and 7 o'clock to the sound of thunder as a warm front had collided with a cold front and created very unstable atmospheric conditions. About 9 o'clock, people began to gather in the chapel, mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and wives and children and friends and acquaintances for the service of graduation that was to follow. And about 9:30 or 9:40, the faculty and the staff gathered in the rotunda of Staley Hall, pulling on their academic robes and trying to get their hoods straightened and fastened and their hats squared away. And Archie Nations, the faculty marshal, was trying to get them lined up in proper order, which is always a difficult thing to do. And Randall Lolly came in the door in his hat and his robe and his hood and his presidential medallion around his neck and an armload of strange-looking objects. They were brass sticks about this long with a knob on the end of them, and as he came into the back door of Staley Hall, or actually what is the front door, he began passing these out to each individual who was in the line up for the academic procession. And the individuals in the procession began looking at these strange-looking objects and wondering what it was all about, and hearing the thunder on the outside. And as he passed out the last ones of these, those senior faculty members who are not wont to hold back their questions said, "What on earth is this about? And what is this for?" And Randall said, "Well, we are all going to carry these as we march in procession today. This is something of what it means to be out in the weather together." And it approached the time for the procession to leave Staley Hall and to move toward Binkley Chapel. And as the door swung open, the people at the head of the line, the senior faculty members, stood aside and invited the administrative people who had resigned to come forward to march out first. And it was thought at first that this was a courtesy to the administrators, but then it became apparent that it was not so much a courtesy as it was a kind of test, because the faculty wanted to know what was going to happen and how dangerous it just might be to step outside into the storm holding on to the brass sticks. And the procession stepped out of the double doors of Staley Hall and down the steps, led by former President Lally. And as he stepped down on the last step, and as he moved into what is the intersection of a brick sidewalk, for the first time in living memory, instead of going forward toward Binkley Chapel, he turned left, which is something that his detractors have felt he has been doing for a long, long time. He turned left and started down the sidewalk toward Broyhill Hall. And everybody behind him also turned left and started toward Broyhill Hall. And so the procession moved past the library and down past Broyhill Hall, and then it went on down toward the brick wall, the rock wall. And there the procession got to the entryway of the rock wall there at the intersection of North Main, and it went through the rock wall again for the first time in living memory. An academic procession veered off and out into the community. It was as if a planet, which had been for millennia in its orbit around the sun, decided suddenly to go somewhere else. And there, Kathleen Chandley and Ruth Snapp stood on the steps of the corner restaurant in utter amazement to see this academic procession moving through the rock wall and out into North Main Street, and then on up North Main Street, the procession continued to go, with everyone, of course, wondering, where on earth are we headed after all? And as things happen at times in under these kinds of stormy atmospheric conditions, the clouds arrange themselves in such a way as to sort of block where the sun usually came from the east, and it looked as if the sun was actually in the north. And as the procession continued, there was the sound of music. And at first, folks thought it was bagpipes, particularly those with a Scottish background thought it was bagpipes. And then they discovered that it was not bagpipes, but rather it was five students plus Michael Hahn playing accordions. It was the case that this was the occasion of the graduation of a clandestine gospel accordion class that Michael Hahn had been teaching for 3 years in order to undermine the gospel music in the Southern Baptist Convention. And here they were. They were playing, and they were playing, "I Will Arise and Go to Jesus." And the group began to sing. And they continued walking, kind of marching to the beat of this song, and as they walked, the ordinary colors on the academic robes, the crimsons and the pinks and the blues, they began to change, and they began to turn yellow. The hoods and the chevrons and the special decorations all began to turn yellow. And then they turned so yellow that they turned finally into a deep gold. And by the time the procession had reached Dr. Mosley's office on North Main and Walnut, It was a sea of black and gold. And this sea of black and gold robes moved forward until they occupied the lawn in front of the Calvin Jones house. The whole lawn. And Randall Lally stepped up onto the porch of the Calvin Jones house, and he stood there and he looked out, and everybody gathered around as if the porch was a kind of stage and something was going to happen there. As indeed it did in just a minute, when Dr. Lally knocked on the door of the house, and the door came open, and an older man in a gray beard stepped out. He was in a black suit, and he had a high, stiff collar, and he had very dark, deep blue eyes, and he looked out over this crowd. And at that moment, the thunder seemed to die away, and it was as if nature had caught her breath. It was so quiet. It was so quiet you could hear a pin drop in the grass. And Randall Lally said, "My friends, I want to introduce to you Dr. Samuel Waite, the first president of Wake Forest College." And folks stood there, and their mouths kind of fell open, and they looked up there as time folded back on itself. And Dr. Waite said, "I'm glad you have come here today. And as you stand before this house, you stand before a symbol of a Christian mission to push back the darkness of ignorance. I want to tell you about pushing back the darkness of ignorance," he said. He said, "I came to North Carolina in the early 1830s. I came here with a companion to raise money for Columbian College in Washington, D.C., which later was to become George Washington University. I came probably to the wrong place because there was not a lot of money in North Carolina," he said. "And I had a breakdown of my wagon. I had an accident, and the wagon broke down, and I had to wait for a while for it to be repaired. And while I was waiting for it to be repaired, I kind of took stock of what this place was like and decided that my real mission was here in North Carolina. For you see, in the 1830s, North Carolina had the lowest per capita income and the highest rate of illiteracy of any state in the Union. And so I arranged for the purchase of this house, the Calvin Jones house and property and surrounding properties, in order to establish a school. And the first name that we gave the school was the Wake Forest Institute for Manual Labor. Now, this did not bring us in just a whole lot of students. But our goal was, of course, to bring the students in and let them work for their tuition. And so we gave it that name, and we did get students, and they came and they began to learn, and our goal was to have an educated ministry. There were only 5 educated Baptist ministers in the state of North Carolina at that time. We felt there needed to be more. And so we started this educational venture that has gone on and on and on until your time. But I must tell you something about the risks of pushing back the borders of ignorance. Ignorance, you know, ignorance could be defined as captivity to a provincial and narrow and limited view of yourself and the world. And when you begin pushing back the borders of ignorance, you run a risk because you don't know where it will take you. And I did not know and could not know where the pushing back of the borders of ignorance was going to take this school. And in fact, it took it to a place I never dreamed. It took it to at least 2 places I never dreamed. And it would arrive at those places only after my death. And one place it has taken, people, is with regard to women. I stand here before you and I look out here and I see these graduates, and many of you are women. And I must confess, that in the 1830s and 40s and 50s and on, we had no idea of educating women for ministry. We had no idea about their suitability for this professional role. In fact, we had no idea of educating women at all, because you see, we only had men students. But pushing back the darkness of ignorance has led us to a new place. It certainly has led you to a new place. The inclusion of women in the ministry of Jesus Christ. But there is yet another place that the borders of our ignorance were pushed back after my death. And that is with regard to the institution of slavery. For you see, we accepted that institution as a given, and we did not challenge it until after the Civil War. And you are still the recipients of the legacy of that terrible, terrible thing. White and black alike. We couldn't see it then. You can see it now. How long is it going to take us to fully realize the Magna Carta of humanity in Galatians 3:28? For there is neither Jew nor Greek. There is neither slave nor free. There is neither male nor female. Now, I have arranged a meeting for you, he said. A little meeting for you, and I want you to turn as I take you over here to the corner of Juniper and North Main. And he stepped down off of the steps of that house, and he walked through the crowd. And he walked to the corner of Juniper and North Main. And people kind of turned, and they gathered up there toward the corner, as many as could get there at the corner. And across the street, it was the southeastern folks that were standing appropriately on the southeastern corner of the boulevard. And then across the street on the northeastern corner were the folks that had come over from the black community at Wake Forest. And they were gathered there. And they were standing there. And then across the street on the northwestern corner were people who had come from the mill community, from a little geographical spot just right up the street here that's still identified in world atlases as Royal Mills. There they were. They were standing there. And there on the northwest corner were white middle-class people from the city of Wake Forest. And Dr. Waite said, I've called you together to consider together your common losses and your common wounds, because a part of pushing back the borders of ignorance is to understand and embrace your losses. And there he was talking to the southeastern people about their loss of a president and a dean, and talking to the black community about their deep losses as they stood there on land that their ancestors had tilled and planted and reaped as slaves. And the mill community, as they thought about their loss of the mill less than a decade ago, and the center of their social life and their jobs, and the middle-class white people who had never come to terms with the loss of the college in 1956. And they all stood there, and they were kind of awkward because they'd never quite been in this sort of situation before in town. They'd never really stood there and looked at each other this way before. And as they looked, and as they thought about it, little by little, one by one, they began to cross the street and talk to each other. And they talked about their losses. And some of them began to cry. And some began to weep. And as they cried, it began finally to rain. And it was not a hard rain, it was a gentle rain. And it was a warm rain. It was a rain as warm as their tears. And the rain mixed with their tears, and it flowed down in little rivulets and flowed into the curbside. And they all were standing there talking with each other, and they were soaked to the skin. They were soaked to their underwear. They were so soaked. And then they began to move on down the street back toward the seminary. Only this time it wasn't an academic procession. It was people in academic robes mixed in with black people and middle-class white people from the community and mill people. And they were all marching along, and they were holding hands, and the black people struck up the chant, "We shall overcome someday." And they left Juniper and they walked on toward Walnut Street. And they walked on down toward Pine Street, past those big Victorian houses. And they walked on toward the corner. And they got back to the corner and they crossed back through the rock wall and toward Broyhill Hall. Back again, only this time it looked real different because, for one thing, there was smoke coming out of the chimneys of Broyhill Hall. Nobody had ever seen that before. And there are a lot of chimneys, if you will notice, on Broyhill Hall. And there was smoke coming out, and there was the smell of formaldehyde in the air. And the parking lot was not paved, it was dirt. And there were different kinds of cars, the Toyotas and the Hondas and the Nissans were all gone, and out there instead there was a Hudson Terraplane, and there was a Willis Overland, and there was a Packard, and there was a Studebaker. And they walked on to the front of Lee Laboratory in the rain. It was now Lee Laboratory, as it said over the door, Lee Laboratory, the oldest science building in North Carolina. And the rain began to slack up, and it began to stop. And as it began to stop, why, Dean Morris Ashcraft walked up. He walked up to the door, and he opened the door, and he went in. And he came out, and accompanying him was a short, balding man in a three-piece suit. And Ashcraft said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce to you William Lewis Poteet, former president of Wake Forest College." And Dr. Poteet stood there and said, "I'm glad you're here. You're standing here on ground that is the ground of controversy. Two major controversies have occurred here. One in my time and one in your time, and you are very familiar with the one in your time, the struggle over academic freedom. I want to tell you about the one in my time, which also was a struggle over academic freedom. Because you see, I inadvertently set off the anti-evolution controversy in the 1920s. And it happened right here in this building. You see, from the time of 1905, when I became president of this college, I taught a freshman biology course regularly here. And I taught a theory of evolution. I taught it because I believed it to be true, and I believed God to be the author of all truth. So I taught evolution. And people got wind of that, and a certain evangelist got wind of it. His name was Thomas Theodore Martin, and he heard about this, and he began to preach against this. He began to preach against me. He began to write articles against me. Wrote articles in 1919 and 1920 in the Western Recorder and said, "Here is a man who is teaching at a Baptist school, taking Baptist money to teach Baptist doctrine, and he is taking it under false pretenses." And of course, he reserved to himself the right to determine what was Baptist doctrine. Well, he also wrote a book. He wrote a book about teaching evolution in the high schools called Hell and the High Schools, which earned him the well-deserved nickname of Hell and the High Schools Martin. Well, Helen High School's Martin was preaching and teaching these things and writing and got the attention of J. Frank Norris down in Fort Worth, Texas, the pastor of First Baptist Church. And J. Frank Norris set about to try to remove me as the president of Wake Forest College. And the showdown came in 1922 at the North Carolina Baptist Convention in Winston-Salem, where there was to be, you might say, a vote of confidence on my presidency. And I went there and I spoke. And I got a resounding vote of affirmation. But that was not the end of the story, because there was a campaign on in the state of North Carolina to outlaw the teaching of evolution in the public schools. States all over the South had successfully passed legislation to prevent the teaching of evolution. And a bill by Scott Poole appeared in 1925 on in the Education Committee of the North Carolina House of Representatives. And I went down there to see about this, and I was accompanied by Harry Chase, the president of the University of North Carolina. And Harry Chase testified before the committee, and he opened by saying, "Gentlemen and ladies, I am not here to discuss evolution. I am here to speak on behalf of human liberty." And he spoke, and I worked with the people in the legislature, and that bill, when it came to the floor, was defeated. 67-46. And of those people in the House of Representatives, 21 were graduates or had attended Wake Forest College, and all but three of them voted against that bill. And I'm very proud to say that I was told again and again by people that it was my graduates, my students, who turned that bill around in the state legislature. I must go now, but I leave you with this word. And that is, we must always be courageous in seeking the truth. Do not suppose that the truth is going to lead us to disaster, for it is God's truth. It may indeed lead us to pain. It may indeed cause us to have to rearrange our worldview, but the truth is always God's truth. And then the crowd moved from there, and they began moving up toward the library and Staley Hall, and they filled the space between the library and Staley Hall. And there, standing at the corner of Staley Hall, was a man in an academic robe, bareheaded, holding a cup of coffee and smoking a cigar. It was a black cup of coffee, and it was a cigar that had been put out once and relit, and it was a very strong cigar. And Tom Bland, the senior member of the faculty, walked up to this man and shook his hand and turned to the group gathered there and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce to you Dr. Sid Staley, the first president of Southeastern Seminary." And Dr. Staley said, "Well, you've come to the last stop on your pilgrimage today, this strange pilgrimage you have taken. You've come to the last stop. And I'm going to ask those of you who are leaving to move over here to my left, and those of you who are staying to stand over here toward my right." And the people began to separate themselves, the graduates, the people who had resigned, the people who had retired, their friends, their families. They began to move over to the left and the others to the right. And he said, "I have something to say to those of you who are leaving and those of you who are staying. To those of you who are leaving, you are not leaving here because simply you are graduating or because you are resigning or because you are retiring. You are leaving here as apostles of freedom. And wherever you go, what you have experienced this year at this place will go with you. You have been forever changed by your experience here, and you will never be the same. And wherever you go, the people you are involved with will also be changed. You are going forth as apostles of freedom." And then he turned to the folks who were staying, and he said, "Those of you who are staying, I have this to say to you. You have not chosen this cause of freedom. In some mysterious way, unknown to all of us, it has chosen you. And you have become, without choosing it, a beacon of human liberty in a society that has lost its bearings with regard to this inalienable human right. And at this point, a breeze stirred through the crowd, and the clouds moved about and kind of broke, and a shaft of sunlight came through the clouds and struck those people standing there between the library and Staley Hall. There was a warm pool of sunlight that enveloped all of them. And the people who were leaving, kind of standing up toward the circular drive, looking back on those folks, saw this against this charcoal dark gray sky of the remaining clouds. They saw these people standing there, and the colors on the academic robes had returned to their normal crimson and pink and blue and orange. And they were mixed together with people in blue jeans and overalls and plaid shirts. And there were yellow flowers blooming all around. And it was as if the rainbow that one might expect at such a time had not appeared in the sky, but rather was spilling out on the ground. And as they looked, the people and the colors danced with such brilliance that they could hardly stand it. And it was so beautiful that they could hardly take it in.